Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. And every once in a while, we get an actor that, Bill, you will say to me, oh, do you know such and such?
Right.
This said Stephen Tobolowsky. I said, I don't know that I do. And you start naming names of Memento, Groundhog Day. And then I'm like, oh, my God, he's in the Goldbergs that I watch every week.
Right.
And you may not know his name, but you sure know his face because he's surfaced in everything. That guy, Stephen Tobolowsky, on the line with us right now. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, good morning, Wendy.
Good morning. We were looking, I can't believe all the movies and TV shows you have been in, and I apologize for not knowing your name right off the bat.
No, no, it makes me ill when I think of my resume. I mean, each one of those movies is like a scar, you know, where you've got cut. But I was doing one movie, I forget what it was, and I was in my trailer, and outside the door was a lighting man talking with one of the guys who handles the sets, and they were showing each other their scars. And the lighting guy said, this is where I got 50,000 volts in my arm. Then the set guy pulled up his pants leg and said, this is where I got some rebar through my leg. And they were having the best time talking about all of their injuries. And I realized at a certain point in our lives, we are more proud of our scars than we are of our perfections. And that's me.
Beautiful.
100%.
But Stephen, in a way, and I've heard other character actors say this over the years, it's better to be that guy, the guy that people go, I think I know that guy. Where do I know that guy from? Because you work forever, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a reason for this. When you are a leading actor here, I could bring up a specific example like Chevy Chase.
Mm-hmm.
When Chevy Chase was at the height of his game, he was commanding several $1 million a movie, and that is fine as long as you have a big opening weekend.
Right.
If you don't open big, then that could spell the end of your career as a leading man, and then you have a great deal of difficulty getting any part because you're tainted.
Yep.
Whereas with me, I could be in hits like Groundhog Day. I could be in flops like Dr. Jekyll and Ms. Hyde. I could be in all sorts of things, and I just keep going.
All right, so where did it all begin? Because according to the Internet Movie Database, IMDb, it just astounds me when you look at all your credits. But it all started, what, 1976, Keep My Grave Open? You played
Were
the
you
part
in Keep
of-
My Grave Open, Stephen?
I was in Keep My Grave Open. And let me tell you,
yeah,
this film is a cult film in England. I get letters from England of people saying, with all seriousness, were you in Keep My Grave Open? I played Robert the Stable Boy,
yeah,
who ends up getting hacked to death with a samurai sword in the shower. I did, in this film, have a horse monologue. My biggest speech I had to deliver to a horse. And the horse, of course, wouldn't look at me. So the director stuck carrots up the sleeves of my jacket.
Oh.
So the horse would look like he liked me. But that was. I'll tell you one interesting thing about that first film, Keep My Grave Open. And this is for the film aficionados who are listening to your show.
Yeah.
The cinematographer on that film was John Valtenberger, who was the last living student of Sergei Eisenstein.
Not bad.
Who is like one of the founders of the art of film.
Yeah.
So it was a very interesting film for the beginning. But, you know, going to Wendy's question, when did it all start?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, when you ask any of us, when did it start? It all depends on where you want to draw that starting line. Because, Wendy, when I was 4, 5, 6 years of age, instead of playing cowboys and Indians, I would ask the kids in the block if they wanted to play movies.
Really?
I would want to swashbuckle, I'd take a stick and pretend I was a pirate, Burt Lancaster, on a pirate ship, doing sword fights. I would strangle myself in the yard. pretending I was in some sort of movie. And my mother would just gaze out the window and sigh like, oh, no. This is before the age of child psychiatry. So they just, and we were in Texas, so they figured, you know, what the hell.
Well, looking at all your credits, you're credited for something new now, too, The Primary Instinct. Now, I noticed you started a Kickstarter campaign to get this The Primary Instinct going, and it is now on Hulu. Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of an odd story in that, what is the old saying they have, God closes a door and opens a window?
Mm-hmm.
I think, have you ever heard that?
Sure.
So a few years ago, I had a terrible accident. I broke my neck while riding a horse on the side of an active volcano in Iceland.
Oh, my God.
So they're like, yeah, what could possibly go wrong with that set of choices? So anyway, I'm sitting at home, and I'm in my neck brace, and there's not a lot you could do when you have a broken neck. And the doctor told me I had a fatal injury, which is a really bad thing to tell a living patient.
Yeah.
It's a terrible misuse of the word fatal. And so I'm sitting at home and thinking, what if what the doctor told me was true, and what if it was fatal? I want to write down the stories of my life that I would tell my children that I wanted them to know about their dad if I never lived. So while I was recuperating, I began writing these stories. These stories ended up being recorded on the Internet. They were picked up by NPR and Public Radio International and recorded and broadcast in several cities, some even in Chicago. Boston, New York, Seattle. Seattle was big. They played all of my stories all the time for 2-3 years, and I became like Paul McCartney in Seattle. Every Simon & Schuster published a book of my stories called The Dangerous Animals Club, all from this period of time in which I was recovering. The Primary Instinct is a concert film of some of these stories, which I performed in Seattle. We had a film crew from Chicago who came and filmed it. We had about, over 1,000 people in the audience. The Chicago crew came in and filmed this. We had one shot to get it because we raised money on
Kickstarter.
It wasn't indie. Kickstarter. Yeah. We raised about $50,000. And to pay off everybody except for ourselves. And we made this film, The Primary Instinct, which is me telling the story of the primary instinct, which is a story my mother used to always tell me about what the primary instinct of human beings are. My mother was the philosopher of our family. And this turned out to be quite an amusing and delightful film. And we were named the best film at the Seattle Film Festival.
Look at that.
And Hulu has now said, we're going to show you on Hulu. We're on iTunes and all sorts of other things. If you go to, I believe, theprimaryinstinct.com, it tells all the places where Primary Instinct is playing. But this movie was like the little engine that could, and it's what's happening in this day and time with the advent. Some of your listeners will know what I'm talking about, HD, high-definition recording. Instead of shooting with film, you shoot on digital, which is so much cheaper. So everybody's making movies now, and we're one of them, and we just got picked up by Hulu, and we're just thrilled.
That's fantastic. That's great.
The movie is quite amusing, and it was just one of those experiences that came from a bad time.
Well, they do, you know, things do turn out, I don't know, they always say everything happens for a reason. I don't know if I believe that, but there are certain instances where sometimes you even believe it, don't you, Stephen?
I think you do. When you have a weird profession like being an actor, and at any one time, you could not work for the rest of your life. You always have a sort of sword of Damocles over your head. You develop a faithful view toward life, and you begin to think, there's something good that has to come out of this experience. And it does one of two things. It either makes you an optimist, which it made me.
Well, sure, because you had a fatal accident that you survived. Yeah. So, yeah.
Stephen, are you okay on time? Yeah. Can you hold on for just a second? We got to take a quick break. You're good?
You got it, Phil. I'm good.
Stephen Tobolowsky is our guest, known for his many, many film roles and television roles. We'll continue to talk to Stephen next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We are talking with Stephen Tobolowsky. You may not know the name, but you sure know the face, and you know the acting ability. Known for roles in Memento, Groundhog Day. If I can just say, for those of you who listen to Nick DiGilio late night, he's going to do a screening of the movie Groundhog's Day on Groundhog's Day. Stephen, of course, is in that movie, Needle Nose Ned, and it's part of Nick's Film Club. So Tuesday, February 2nd, Movie Co-Theater in Rosemont. You can find out more information on Nick DiGilio Film Club on Facebook.
And at my film club, Stephen, we're showing Keep My Grave Open, where you play Robert the Stable Boy, and that's going to be November 8th. So fly in for that.
I have two shout outs here. One to Nick DiGilio. I've been talking to Nick via the internet, and I am going to try to Skype into his film club.
Nice.
On Groundhog Day. So show up, and I'm going to try to show up on the screen. And also, if you guys, if anybody there is in the bitter cold, want something fun to do, the weekend before Groundhog Day, that Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday in Woodstock, Illinois, where we filmed the movie, there's going to be all sorts of festivities, tours of where we shot everything and all sorts of trivia and showing of the film, all sorts of good things. So that's happening in Woodstock around that period of time, too. So a lot of things going on.
Stephen, how cool is it that the internet is here? When you said you've communicated with Nick DiGilio via the internet, it has totally changed things for us as fans and you as actors, where we can actually communicate with one another.
It's amazing. And isn't it funny how quickly we have adapted to instant communication, to where now we're like upset if,
right,
if we don't hear back from someone within 15 minutes.
Right.
I remember I got into a thing with the IRS. Well, not me. I didn't. The IRS got into something with me when I was starting my career, and they said that I didn't pay enough in taxes, and I owed them $25 more.
So $25.
$25. So I sent them a check for $25. But it took so long for the check to get there, like 3-4 days, they sent a letter back saying that now I owe them interest on the $25, and I had to pay them 7 cents.
Oh.
So I send them 7 cents in the letter to there, and it took so long, they said that I owe them interest now on the 7 cents. This does not exist anymore in the realm of internet, where you have your credit card, and it's there at Amazon or whatever, and you get hacked, and you end up buying plane tickets to South Korea.
Steve,
you know, when I was working on the Goldbergs.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite shows, by the way. Watch it every week with my kids.
I love it. I just finished another Goldbergs a couple days ago, and it is hilarious. It is just hilarious. I was one of the people, you know, we shoot out at Sony. And I don't know about the news stories you guys have in Chicago, but I was one of the people hacked by North Korea.
Really?
Lucky you.
Yes. Yeah, at the Sony lot, they had several people whose identities were stolen, and it was a nightmare. For months, my wife and I were getting things in the mail about accounts that had been opened in our name and plane tickets to Korea and hotel rooms that were being purchased, and we went to the police. We had to go to the FBI. We had to go to the Federal Bureau of Trade, and it went on and on and on and on. So,
Stephen, I don't want to scare you, but there's a story today. Kim Jong-un bought a bumper pool table, and he charged it to your account. So be ready for that.
I knew it. I couldn't trust that guy with my credit card.
Stephen, is this true? I heard this years ago, and I looked it up online earlier today. They said it's true, but I want to hear it from you. The band Radiohead, did they get their name because of you? Can that be possible?
Yes.
It is true?
It is?
This is a weird story, and I don't. If you're up for a weird story, this is a weird story.
All right.
Go for it. What happened?
Okay, I was in college and in love with a dear girl named Beth Henley, who ended up winning Pulitzer.
Sure.
And when we were dating together, she was 18, I was 19, I had these weird experiences where I was at a movement retreat with my movement class, and our teacher was going around the circle saying the first thing that comes in your head. And so we were doing things like people were saying, like, Hobbit and Far Out and everything. And I looked at my teacher and said, I get that you're not who you say you are. And he says, well, what? I said, I get that your name is not your name, and your real initials are M.K. or M.L. And we disbanded our little retreat, and I was headed in my car, and he stopped me on the way to the parking lot. I said, why did you say that about me? And I said, I don't know. He said, say the first thing that came into your head, and I heard this noise in my head, and I just opened my mouth and said that. He said, because it's true. I have an assumed name. When I took this job, and my initials are M.K.
Oh, my God. Were you not freaking out when he told you that?
I was so freaking out. Anyway, I ended up, Beth and I told Beth all this, and she said, this is fabulous. We're going to make a fortune. You know what it is? I'll bring people to you, and you listen to the tones that come from people's head, and you just tell them about it. And this all sounds like good fun, but it turned out not being such good fun, because people would come to me and I would hear a tone in my head and I would just say, like, you just inherited a lot of money and you don't, from your family, you don't know how you're going to spend it. And the guy looked at me like, how did you know that? I told one girl that she had been molested by her father and she was trying so hard to find a way to get past it. She broke out screaming and left. And I mean, it was terrible. And the more I heard the tones, the more they would intrude in my life. So I cut it out. I didn't say anything else. Okay, cut to 16 years later. Beth and I are living together now. She's won the Pulitzer Prize, and a big friend of hers is Jonathan Demme, who just did a musical, Stop Making Sense, with David Byrne and the Talking Heads.
Yeah.
Right? So David Byrne comes over to our house to shoot the video of Road to Nowhere, because Beth and I had a swimming pool in our backyard at the time. And if you go on YouTube and look at the video of Road to Nowhere, the underwater scenes there were shot in our backyard.
Oh, my God. How cool is that?
After that shoot, David is having dinner with us. And he says he wants to work on a new movie called True Stories about people who have weird, incredible things happen to them, but they're true. And then Beth said, well, you ought to talk to my sweetie because he hears tones in his head. David found this enormously amusing. Beth and I ended up writing the first draft of the screenplay of the movie True Story.
Totally love it, with John Goodman. I've seen it a bunch of times. One of my favorite movies and a great soundtrack.
Absolutely. David, I came by before the movie was finished and said, Stephen, I rewrote the script and added a character in there who hears tones like you, and I wrote a song for him called Radiohead. And so the song in the movie, Radiohead, was based on picking up something good, Radiohead. So David wrote that song in the movie based on my stories of my psychic experiences when I was in college. In 1991, the band On a Friday in Oxfordshire, England, had a band meeting and decided to change their name to Radiohead.
Wow.
Because they were fans of David Byrne and fans of that song. And so the band Radiohead got their name from the song, which came from David Byrne, who wrote it about my experiences of when I was 19 years old and reading people's tones at a movement retreat.
Amazing.
We were meant to meet, because that is truly one of my favorite movies. You've got Spalding Gray in it. It's really bizarre. It's about Anytime USA and Carol and Merrill are two twins in there. I mean, it is the coolest movie, True Stories. Go see it. How about that?
It is fantastic. It is a fantastic movie.
Stephen, I want to have lunch with you to hear what tones you hear so you can tell me what's happening in my life.
Stephen, so cool to finally meet you. Both Wendy and I have been fans of yours for a long, long time. And look, you're an even better guy in real life, so everybody wins.
Well, thank you, sir. It is a pleasure to talk to you, kid.
And when you're in Chicago, please come to the studio and see us, and we may see you Skyping in at Nick DiGilio's movie club, which is happening on Groundhog Day with Groundhog Day. Thank you so much, and please keep in touch, Stephen.
Thank you very much, Wendy, and thank you, Bill.
Absolutely. It's Stephen Tobolowsky, everybody. A quick break. We've got some news. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.